Late Night Gamers podcast, where we make all of your gaming habits seem acceptable.
Late Night Gamers. Steve, you suck so bad, it's so unbalanced, blah, and then I just quit and never play it ever again.
Carl,
what do you do in your free time? Sit around knitting? Screw that shit, I'm gonna cut up a dragon's head.
Tim.
It's okay if your guts spill out and you explode into a bloody mess, as long as you don't take your clothes off. What is up, everybody? Welcome to Late Night Gamers Podcast, episode number 51. I'm Nick Perzanowski, and with me this week and every week is Charles Caldwell.
Go and touch that dial.
Tim Madden.
It's weird because we're in the same room right now, so I can't like make an awful noise and not get hit.
And Steve Morgan is unable to join us this week because he was away for a wedding. However, we're coming at you from Boston Festival of Indie Games. And we're having a special episode this week. It's going to be an indie game only episode where we go through our previews of what we were excited about. And then we have quite a few developer interviews that that we're excited to share with you guys. And then we'll also do our impressions of all the games that we were able to see.
It's good stuff straight from the mouths of the developers themselves. So
yeah,
you guys heard it just like we did. So no filter.
No filter whatsoever. It was pretty awesome. Boston Festival of Indie Games is a really cool convention to go to because you get a much deeper connection with the developer. I mean, you go to a PAX and you're talking to a rep. You're not talking to the person that actually put their blood, sweat, and tears into this game. So it's
except for Battle Mage.
Battle Mage.
So that, you know, it's pretty exciting. If you get a chance next year, definitely check it out. But it's interesting now because the three of us are in, Tim, Charles, and I are all in one room, and it's odd.
Yeah, I think it's the first time we recorded last night, so
we were also half drunk.
We've actually done it already, but
it was like 12:30 in the morning, so
this is the first for us.
So the rest of the podcast is gonna go. We're gonna give our previews. And then you're going to hear the developer interviews, and then we will give our impressions. So listen along and check out all the games that we talk about on the podcast, because every single one of the developers that we talk to needs everybody's help to get their games off the ground. So yeah. Enjoy.
Hey, guys. It's Friday night, the night before Boston Festival of Indie Games.
It's actually
Saturday. I don't know. We just walked back from downtown Boston, and
in my day, we walked 10 miles after we had 14 drinks.
Yeah, so we went to Chinatown. We got a couple drinks. Well, no, we went to Chinatown and had dumplings. And
lots of dumplings.
So it's me. I'm Nick. This Charles is here. Tim is here, and Tim's brother Greg is thankfully putting us up because we would otherwise be homeless and in the streets,
in the bushes hunting rabbit.
Unfortunately, Steve couldn't be here this weekend, so Greg's kind of Steve's stand-in.
So we after dumplings, we got some drinks at what's that place called?
The German place.
The German place in Boston.
Something worth, I don't know. John Worth.
Make up your own shit. I don't know. So we got some drinks there. Tim and I had some 9.5% beers. It was good. It was a good start. And then we walked all the way back to Cambridge.
Many a mile. Cut.
Oh, that's just Greg. I was like, So yeah, so now we're just going to talk about a couple games that we're excited about for tomorrow morning. We got some press passes, so we're heading in early, 9 a.m. Check out stuff early, and Charles, what are your things, what are the games you're looking forward to?
The game that's stuck in my head the most is probably Black Hat Oculus. It's the game where you play co-op, where you put on the Oculus Rift and you basically have to solve puzzles, and then there's a person outside of the outside who's looking at what you're doing in the Oculus, kind of like a, I don't know, like a top-down level. They see your little dot where you're moving around, and they're going to give you clues on what you're supposed to do. So that looks very interesting to me, just because I've never used the Oculus Rift. I think that would be a lot of fun. I'm not sure how long-lasting that is, but it looks like a lot of fun for tomorrow. So
yeah.
I'm looking forward to playing that.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's actually a lot of Oculus Rift games, so I'm kind of excited.
Yeah, that's something. I mean,
one of them was actually mentioned that they had like a special Oculus Rift. Like, if you have your Oculus Rift, please bring it along. And like,
yeah, right.
Really?
Yeah, I spent $500 on an Oculus Rift that has like nothing right now. But the, we all wanted to test it out at PAX, but the lines were ridiculous.
Because there was only one.
And it was total nonsense. Like, you'd get there and they'd be like, yeah, come back later. And no, you can't wait around until it's time to... It was dumb. So hopefully this will be a good place to actually test one out, and a couple different games actually. So I think those will probably be some of the games that I actually kind of gravitate to see what the Oculus Rift is all about.
With a bunch of diverse games too, because it's not just that one game where it's like puzzle solving, like kind of like with what's the name of the game Portal. That game reminds me a lot of like the interface of Portal, but there's also horror survival games that come with the Oculus Rift.
Yeah,
the one that you played was obviously very user friendly with the Oculus Rift. That was the name of that one.
Outlast.
Yeah, Outlast. So it's interesting to see how they come.
Yeah, actually, the game I think the one I'm most excited to see is. It's called A Vinyl Lullaby, and it's another Oculus Rift game, because it looks weird, but at the same time looks like it could like potentially be really creepy.
That's a survival horror type game, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's some of the screenshots made it look like I don't even know what it reminds me of, but it almost kind of reminds me of like Myst. You know, it's got this weird vibe to it that and it reminds me too of like Portal, I don't even know how to explain it, but just weird, like...
Just the graphics level.
It's really...
Yeah.
It looks really desolate.
Yeah.
And
it's kind of like you're like, in this place where there were people before.
Yeah.
And you kind of have to figure out what happened. I don't know the plot. I don't think they really explained the
story. Did I see a screenshot of these weird, like, finger creatures?
Yeah.
They were, like... with, like, faces. Looking
at you. I didn't understand that.
I don't know what that was about, but maybe we'll find
Silent
out.
Silent Hill meets... 6-year-old? Like, what is that?
Yeah, Silent Hill would be awesome on Oculus Rift. That would be ridiculous.
Unfortunately, that's not an indie title.
Also, it doesn't seem like the Oculus Rift has got quite the graphics. If that's kind of the maximum tier of where the graphics are, then maybe it's another iteration that comes out that will improve the graphics of the Oculus Rift.
Yeah.
So, what's your game?
I'd say... Well, I put down a few, but I think the one I'm most looking forward to is, shit, now I'm forgetting the name of it.
The Eskimo one.
Yeah, the Eskimo one. Was it Never Alone? Sorry. Never Alone. Wow. It's like 12:30
a.m.
Sorry,
Inuit.
It's 12:30 in the morning, and I've had a couple drinks, so I'm.
I literally just got an email from another game. That means they sent it the day of the festival.
9 hours.
Make sure you come over to our booth. Oh boy.
Yeah. P.S. We will not be playing any board games today. Probably.
Before you go, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I feel like this. Like, I don't understand what it must be like to be like a press person at like an event like this. You have people emailing you we got probably 50 emails since we signed up to be press at this thing. Like, I can imagine, like, if you were at PAX, like,
oh,
how inundated you would be.
Well, yeah, because there's 50 indie games, and then there's all these other, like, booths of... Yeah. And then there's all the stuff that are, like, people that are selling stuff, and, like, there's all kinds of stuff going on. It's crazy.
I feel like you need to establish your niche and just focus on that and ignore everything else. Yes. But for us, we're just consumers, so
we'll play whatever interests us. So
right, and we're looking at, they have a, there's a tabletop showcase and there's also a digital game showcase. So it's like, you know, we're focused on the digital game showcase because we play video games. We don't play tabletop games.
There was maybe like one board game that looked interesting to me. Not that I think that I'll play it, but I think it was like the spy game. But I mean, ultimately, like, I'm not that interested in those board games because it's boring.
I mean, if they came out with a like a 2014 version of Don't Wake Daddy, then I'd be totally behind that. But Don't Wake Daddy or he'll slap you in the face.
Domestic abuse.
Our focus is definitely on the video games, but I'll probably take a look tomorrow. You're really bored.
Yeah, we'll walk by. We're not going to sit down and play. I mean, those board games take hours to complete. So it's like, I don't know how you can get a sense of how a game actually is, except by their whatever their 30-second, 1 minute.
I don't think there's any press of the board games. But
no,
well, anyway, there could be. There probably will be.
To go back to the what you were talking about before, we like totally went off topic.
Assholes. No, the game that I was most looking forward to was Never Alone, which is based on traditional storytelling of like the Inupiat or Inupiaq Indians, natives up in Alaska, which is really interesting because it was actually the game was actually funded by Alaskan natives, and that's cool. they just had like a bunch of they just had some money that they wanted to invest into something, and they chose a video game to like really get the idea out, get the stories out of the stuff that they've been telling for centuries, and the voices are all done by Native Alaskans. It's a lot of work with the Native people and everything. So it's really interesting.
That sounds like really cool.
It does sound really cool, and it's coming to PlayStation 4, Xbox One, and Steam. So it should be pretty big, and it sounds like it's actually part of a bigger thing, this like World Games Initiative, which is which they'll bring like traditional stories from other cultures into the video game world, which is
a cool idea.
Which is a cool idea. I mentioned on the website that I played this like Navajo scene from Beyond Two Souls, which I don't know how convoluted the actual story was, but it was cool, and I was like, they really shouldn't integrate culture into more games, and so I'm really intrigued by this, and I hope it turns out to be as good as I want it to be.
Yeah, they did a lot of that with Prey.
What did they?
Prey was based on all this thing in American culture.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And then they kind of like, who knows what they're doing, or what would have happened with Prey 2, but Prey was definitely...
it's still in production, right?
That's what they say, but it's going to be like... It's gonna be like Duke Nukem.
We've done this like 20 times.
It's gonna be like Duke Nukem Infinity. It's gonna come out in 10 years. Like they're like, oh, it's Prey 2, and everyone's gonna be like, these are graphics from 10 years ago. Like you should have just put it out.
All right. Yeah. So we'll bring up some actual reviews of not reviews, but.
Feelings.
What we've seen.
Our impressions.
Feelings of things. Impressions of...
We've got punches.
Ryan Brawley, the game we're working on is a Tofu Tale.
Okay, I just have a few questions. So I guess, what influenced you while making the game?
Well, starting out, we sort of were going for a game that was just easy to make. It's our first game, so just thought of an easy puzzle game. And we were doing research for another game that we wanted to make... sort of later on, and reading a lot about Japanese mythology, and happened upon this this thing called tofu that looks very much like the cube, and then found that the kitsune, which is that magical fox that turns Mr. Tofu into the cube of tofu, actually it's their favorite food, so it kind of all fit together at that point, and our game was born.
Excellent. So what would you say that sets your game apart from like other games that are here? Is there anything in particular?
I think the artistic style of it. It's very influenced by Japanese mythology and art. Sort of deviates a little in the middle to go along with the narrative, but I think that's probably it.
So I guess one last question. You know, as an indie developer, you know, what would you say is the hardest part of developing the game? Was there something that stuck out that really made it difficult?
The amount of hats that we have to wear in order to get through this.
How many people do you have actually at the studio, or I guess studio? I'll call it an indie studio.
Studio as in my bedroom.
Excellent.
We have three main people, and then we have someone working on music and the story.
Awesome. Well, congratulations, and good luck with everything that you do.
All right. Thanks.
Nice to meet you.
Hi. Hi. I'm Julie Murphy from Red Survivor at Mustachio Games.
Hey, I'm Dylan Marichek. I'm a lead programmer at Mustachio Games working on Red Survivor.
Okay, so my first question for you guys is what influenced you guys while making the game?
I think we came together around this idea of like doing a zombie game in a different way. So there's some zombie strategy games out there, but like ultimately it's a really unexplored area, and we're really inspired by games like Civilization. We want to sort of give the experience of like not going out and killing a bunch of zombies, but you know, surviving, living in a post-apocalyptic world, making your way through there.
I guess my next question then is, you know, what would you say, what one thing would you say sets your game apart from other games that people would see here today?
I think this game has, you know, it has a fairly unique style. It has really like the...
I was going to say, I think what sets us apart from other games, we have a really unique visual style. That's very inspired, and I would say that as the artist on this team, but it's very inspired by old Russian propaganda, World War I, World War II, so we're trying to do something really graphic, very comic booky, and we feel that sets us apart from other games in the same genre.
Okay. Now, it's very comic booky, so are you guys, like, big Walking Dead fans, or...
Yeah.
Any other type of zombie fiction?
Zombie fiction, though. So I played both of the Walking Dead games from Telltale. I really liked both seasons. I really liked those. Other zombie media I enjoy. I liked World War Z, the book, not the movie. we also play a bunch of other zombie games. So Proletariat, I think they're here. They have another zombie game, which is pretty cool. Yeah. So we're taking a lot of zombie media recently.
Perfect.
Yeah.
So I guess my final question for you then is, as an indie developer, what would you guys say is the one hardest thing that you know, creating a game, what was the one hardest thing to do that?
Oh, man.
I'd say the hardest thing for us is finding time, because this is sort of... an additional project on top of our regular jobs or our school.
None of us are full-time on this project.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so we're all either students, so still in school and, like, doing this extra, or, like, working full-time and doing this weeknights and weekends. So really finding the time to make it as awesome as we want it to be, we have to fit it in. You know, it's a little difficult to slot it in with everything else in life.
Nice.
But, yeah.
What does everybody do? Or school, if you're a student, where do you go to school? What, like...
So I'm a student at Northeastern. We have a couple other students on the team. So we have somebody from another student from Northeastern, a student from RISD, then we have a couple like.
Yeah, and I work full time for a mobile app company. I do UI and UX design. So I art all day, and then I come home and art some more. Yeah.
Excellent.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Thanks for playing.
All right, my name's John Araujo, and the game I am creating is called Unbroken.
So I guess the first question is, what influenced you while developing the game?
Oh, man. pretty much everything that I watched or played while creating the game over the past roughly year or so. But mainly, I'd say my influence has got to be Dark Souls. For the aesthetic, the atmosphere, and the theme, like the core mentality behind the game. The name Unbroken is actually kind of a reference to the idea in games like Dark Souls of, like, the only way that you really lose is when you give up, when you let the game break you. So,
If you had to pick one thing, what would you say sets your game apart from other games here today?
Oh, I haven't seen any other games here today, and I won't either because I'm tethered to this table. I mean, from the games that I saw, I guess, I didn't see a lot of games with a really, Dark Souls-like tinge to them. I don't know. I'm just trying to make, like, a game that's challenging and fun to play, and I feel like a lot of the other games that I saw are trying more to be a part of a culture, like trying more to be indie, you know, and like LOL random and stuff like that. And yeah, my game doesn't have any of that in it.
It definitely has that Dark Souls feel, I would say. Yeah. So one last question: as an indie developer, what would you say is the hardest part of developing and distributing a game?
Oh, well, I haven't distributed a game yet. I'd say the hardest part of developing the game as an indie has got to be the isolation. Oh my god. So I'm a one-man team, so that's, it goes double for me, because, like, a lot of indies are working together, you know, they have, like, they're wearing multiple hats, but maybe one guy's the artist and one guy's the programmer. But, you know, this is going to be the first time in almost a year that I've gotten to get out and talk to other people who develop games. And it's tough. Yeah. It's tough. It feels like I feel like an outcast in my normal everyday life. And if I worked at a studio or something, I would be part of a culture of people who are all working together as a team in a corporation or a company or something like that. And I think that that's the biggest difficulty.
Nice.
Yeah. Cool.
Thank you very much. What are you playing right now? Actually, what is?
I haven't played a game in so long. Yeah. What am I playing?
Game you played?
Probably Civilization. I play Civ with my wife. Nice. It's the only game I can get her to play. So I play Civ 5, and I don't know. So cool. It's a great way to take a break from making games.
Yeah.
It's really casual and interactive and social.
Excellent.
Yep.
Well, thank you very much. You. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks for stopping by.
My name's Mark Sullivan.
My name is Sin, and I worked on the art.
The game we worked on is Black Hat Oculus.
All right, so my first question for you guys is, what influenced you while developing the game?
Oh, there are so many influences. Our first initial inspiration was The Matrix. So, one player is the Morpheus, like the Mac player, and the other player is is the Neo player in the Rift. And I think there are a lot of game influences as well that Mark, I think.
Things like Metal Gear was definitely a big reference. Like when we were working on this game, one of the tests we did was we played the original Metal Gear Solid, which has a nice overview map a lot like this one, and
yeah,
we boxed off part of the screen, and I was giving Sin instructions as she. She played through the game, like, oh no, there are enemies, stop, you know, decoupling that information.
Yeah. Nice. My next question is, and I don't even think I have to ask this, the question is, what would you say sets your game apart from other games here? I think it's a pretty unique game.
Yeah, so there were a few things that we went after. Like, we wanted to make an Oculus Rift game, we wanted to make a multiplayer game, and we wanted to make a game with asymmetric multiplayer. I haven't personally seen a lot of multiplayer experiences for the Rift, we decided to do it in an asymmetric way where one player is in the Rift and one player is not, and that's a pretty unique thing for our game from what I've seen.
Gotcha. And we also wanted to make the game really accessible because sometimes I'm not really good with the controls, so I can't shoot really well or do all sorts of nimble things with it. So
yeah.
For me, as a player, it's really fun to be able to yell and communicate and feel that frustration when like the he's not like turning the right way or something like that.
Yeah, a lot of the game is just based on communication.
Huge communication.
So the final question, as an indie developer, what would you guys say was the hardest part of creating a game?
Let's see.
I think it's not having any money because because we don't, we actually, we have a Kickstarter for money just to buy Unity. Like, it's really expensive, and our pro license ran out, and the script you can't develop for if you don't have pro licenses. So Mark is the only one with a pro license right now, and all of us have to, like, sort of, like, our game developer kind of made it on free and, like, prayed that it would work. so that's probably the, I feel like, this harder part, but you might feel something different.
Honestly, most of this game came together pretty easily, like, mechanics-wise. We developed the original version of this at the Global Game Jam in January 2014, so the core of most of the things you see here were developed in one weekend, so there weren't a lot of development challenges. It's mostly the logistics and things that are the pain.
Yeah. Nice.
Yep.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much, guys.
All right, thank you.
Sorry about the power.
That's fine. Good luck with everything that you guys are doing.
Thank you. Have a great time today.
Thank you.
So, I'm Itai Karen.
And I'm Julia Karin-Ditar.
Don't know your name?
Jesus Christ.
We're working on a game called Mushroom 11.
So my first question for you guys is, what influenced you while developing the game?
So, first of all, what kind of started the whole thing was the Global Game Jam 2012. And it kind of threw a fastball on us with something that doesn't really could mean anything of many different subjects. It was the snake
eating its tail. And so when we came into the game jam, we didn't have any ideas, you know, beforehand. We didn't, we're like, oh, Mushroom 11, this grand idea. We were just like, oh, there's a game jam. Let's make a game in 48 hours. Right. And this came out of it. And we were like, oh, this is pretty fun. Maybe we should continue making this.
No, but not just that. I mean, there, when it comes to influences, so it's, at first it was just mechanics. The mechanics was like how you can make a game that's all about destruction. And destruction is regrowth. That was the whole idea. But then as the game progresses, you start putting in all of the influences that you know from you know your stories in childhood and you're generally you just pour everything you have onto this game and make a story out of it. So it started with something which is very mechanic and grew into a more of like a story.
So what would you say sets your game apart from other games here today?
I think the mechanic is pretty unique. The fact that you have this really tactile sense with the object that you are, and you don't have any direct control over it, is really hard for people to get. But it's also really great because it kind of breaks down barriers in terms of knowing, you know, ideas of like how to move with the regular platformer. So we have a lot of non-gamers, or people who will call themselves non-gamers, come and play and actually do really well in our game, and that makes us really exciting.
So one last question. What would you, as an indie developer, what would you say is the hardest part of creating a game?
Having rent. That's every time I can clear rent, I'm like, yes, mission accomplished. That and I think the guts to go into it, because again, it's like, you know, this, it's really scary to like be like, oh, I'm not gonna work for a studio, I'm gonna do my own thing. That takes a lot of guts, but I think it's worth it because there's a lot of people that have really great ideas out there, and of course now that there's the big indie scene to help support other indies, it's really encouraging to try to get different people to make games and share their stories.
I can personally imagine doing anything else, honestly. Once you have this bug in your head, you have to go through, and everything else is just challenges that you have to tackle on the way to making that game. So for us, Rent is one, for sure. Going to show the game is also one, you know, like, personally, like, my safe place is working on my laptop, on my couch, drinking coffee. So, you know, showing my thing to everybody is not, I mean, definitely, it's very scary. Unfortunately, Julia's doing a much better job than I do. But, you know, you have to go through, you want to show your thing, your creation to more people. And so those are the small obstacles in this really, really wonderful thing, just being able to do what you do.
The game looks amazing, so thank you guys for...
I really like the mechanics of how it works.
You totally nailed it. Actually, so it's, we showed the game 2 weeks ago in PAX Prime, or PAX 10.
Yeah, so you guys got really good, I mean... big reviews on it. Great.
We got a lot of reviews on PAX East. PAX East was really amazing for us. For PAX 10, actually, a lot of news and all media already covered us. It was like, what's new? It was like, I mean, as long as there's nothing really new, they don't want to write too many articles. But anyway, one thing that was really kind of emergent behavior happening in PAX 10 is people starting, we kind of forced them into doing speedruns, because it started kind of a trash talk between me and Julia about who's going to make level 1 faster. And then, like, other players were just as good as we are. I mean, I played this game a billion times, so yeah. I have some advantage, actually much more than Julia. And then we decided, you know what, let's do a speed run. Just time it, like, haphazardly with our stopwatch. And it started, like, this whole competition, like, crowd cheering and all. And then eventually we gave away a couple of the spare T-shirts that we had.
Nice.
And then eventually we, after all the trash talk, Julia and I had did a head-to-head. I beat her by 1 second.
By only one second.
Yeah, I know.
I'm going to get you next time.
Yeah,
that's
today. Right?
Yeah, well,
we had one last night, and I still haven't been able to beat him, but it's only a matter of time.
Yeah.
Which is the part that is the difference between the 1 second? Is it the fire guys?
I think I move faster, and you were more efficient. Yeah. I just move very fast.
Yeah.
Anyway. Well, you have it in you. You have it in you. I think. Anyway, I added this time speedrun option to the game right now. So it's like, people started streaming, our friends, like the guy who makes the audio, started streaming speedruns. Like, it's a thing now. It was great. Like, just see how
that
thing
emerge
out of nothing. So that's fun.
That's awesome.
So that's one of the great things we love about showing the game. Like, you see things that you wouldn't otherwise.
Yeah, and people were like, oh, so if you, like, move, if you delete that part and then you're able to fling that one thing, you'll trick the camera into moving faster. Like, these are the strategies people were talking about while they were analyzing the speedrun, and we were just like, holy cow, we had no idea that this was in our game.
Yeah, because when I play the game, I play it like a scripted play. I know what I'm looking for.
Yeah.
But people play, you know? Whatever is fun.
Yeah, that's true.
Find ways to fling yourself. I know, I was trying to do it. And I just went accidentally clicking and I was going.
Cool.
So James Johnston from Glass Knuckle Games with the game Thief Town.
Okay, so my first question is what influenced you when making the game?
Well, Brett, the developer, it was a basic concept. He just wanted to kind of make this concept of what it's like to just be these same characters and disguise yourself in this field. So he really wanted to push that. It was just a little kind of demo thing, and it kind of spiraled into a whole full release. But it was basically that concept, right? The basic concept's still the same, right? You're in a big field of other people. You don't know who you are, even. Find out who you are, and then find out who they are, and stab them. So that's kind of, you know, it's a basic fun concept, and it came from there.
And it's a party game.
Oh, definitely, yeah. You cannot play this game by yourself. There's no single player. There's no online mode. It's local multiplayer only. And we tried to accommodate people by doing, like, an Android and iOS version to play locally. But this is a game where you sit next to someone, you talk crap, and you stab each other, you know?
Now, do you guys did you guys have any games that you played, like party games, like Mario Party or any of those other games that may have influenced you? Or
Definitely Spy Party was a big thing. So Spy Party is you play right as the spy or the sniper, right? Mm-hmm. So it's one person trying to be sneaky and one person trying to kill. And so Brett took those and mashed them together. You're trying to be sneaky and you can kill. So that was kind of a big, you know, inspiration comparison.
Nice. So what would you say sets your game apart from other games here today?
I don't want to sound like, oh, it's a great game. But I think the whole package, we have incredible music by this local musician. He did like a chiptunes kind of soundtrack. Owen, our team member, did all the art. It's not NES, it's not Atari, but it's sort of this weird mishmash of it all. Yeah. And then just the whole package together, right? It's got an attitude, it's got a little like weirdness to it, so I think that's what really sets it apart, is the whole package overall.
I mean, part of it, it seems like it's got a lot of aesthetic of like arcade games. But those old arcade games, you went and you played, you didn't necessarily enjoy them, but this makes it enjoyable to go back and play that.
Exactly, and the idea that you have to play together, this could be, like you go to PAX, you see the behemoth with their arcade setup. Yeah. You could put this in an arcade booth, and I think it would pull in a couple quarters if this was, you know, 20 years ago. So.
So my final question for you is, as an indie developer, what would you consider the hardest part of creating a game to be?
Trying to make it fun and trying to make it interesting. So Thief Town had the one mode, which is just to stab people. And then we came up with Spy Town with items and Drunk Town with sheriffs. And we're trying to add in more modes and maps and just trying to make it fun and make it playable, you know, forever. Ideally, right, with a game like this, you want people to want to play it all the time and just keep it fresh and keep it interesting. So just trying to come up with that and make it last for a while, you know, is really tough.
Excellent. Yeah. I like it. I had fun with it. So it was enjoyable. Definitely talking shit.
Did you guys get some of these? Or?
Yeah. We did. Yeah. So
thank you very much. Rock on.
What's that?
Why, it's only the latest in multiplayer thief-related action.
Whoa!
My name's Justin Pappas. I'm working on Albino Lullaby, and the studio is Ape Law.
All right. So the first question is, what influenced you while developing the game?
Wow, so much. But I'd say the core influence is actually this band called The Handsome Family. If you guys have heard of it, they did the theme song to True Detective. They have some really interesting dark music with, you know, all about ghosts and hauntings and crazy people and murder and good things like that. So I was listening to that a lot while working on this game, and it definitely influenced the atmosphere, if that's what you mean.
Yeah, absolutely. So the other big question is, what would you say sets your game apart from other games here today?
Sure. It's a first-person horror adventure, right? There's a lot of those. But ours doesn't rely on jump scares or gore to freak you out. We wield merely the psychological to get inside your head, right? So it's more Hitchcock than Wes Craven, right? It's all about the long scare, the build-up to that moment. Right?
Oh, I definitely got that in from the demo.
Okay.
Toward the end where I was like, you know, you're pressing all the buttons and they're kind of coming at you and you're looking for the clicker.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, getting there and just like trying to build up. And
good. Yeah,
it was good. It was awesome.
It's a long con. Yeah.
Yeah. I like it. So one final question. As an indie developer, what would you say is the hardest part of creating a game?
There's a lot of hard parts. I'd say the hardest part about actually creating the game is just that, right? Disciplining yourself, right? Right now I work from home, and there's plenty of distractions, right? I just bought Destiny. Yeah. A lot more fun to play Destiny than to work on a video game, right? So I think it's really hard to fight those distractions, but you really have to set a schedule and stick to that schedule and scold yourself if you're not sticking to that schedule. Yeah, I think sticking to the schedule and staying focused is probably the hardest part, because you don't have a boss, right? So
Right. How did you conceive the antagonist of these creatures?
It's kind of a funny story. We tried a bunch of different things. I don't want to dispel some of the magic and mystery around these guys.
No spoilers.
No spoilers.
But we sort of started with these pegs in the world, and we put this creepy face on the pegs. And we were going to replace them with animated guys running around and, you know, making, you know, with big claws and all that stuff, right? And we put some of that in, and it didn't feel right. It didn't gel with the world. They kind of felt separate from it. They looked too real. And we liked these guys a little bit better. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Scott McCloud's How to Draw Comics. He has this really interesting chart in there where he breaks down comic representations of different characters, right? So basically he says that characters that look more comic-y and less, you know, like a perfect human being, they're generally representative of themes and ideas, right? But characters that look more exactly like a human, right, like Prince Valiant, they're more representative of a character, right? So if a landscape looks like a photograph, it's more about the landscape. But if a landscape is impressionist, it's more about the ideas and feelings, you know, associated with that landscape. So these guys gave us a more of an impressionist feeling, right? And again, allowed people to sort of imagine that they were what they feared they were the most, you know?
Fits the art style really well.
I definitely like the art style. And,
Gives unease.
There's definitely like a, it's a little bit of a funhouse feel to it. I think I mentioned before, but like it's like that creepy, like I don't know. You don't get a sense of having any idea of what's actually going on.
Right.
So
good.
It's good. Now, since you're doing a horror game, are you guys big horror fans?
Absolutely. Yeah. I like jump scares. I like gore. I love all that.
Sure.
I think my favorite horror game, and it's probably not classified as a horror game, would be Stalker, the Shadow of Chernobyl, the original. Just creeping up on a bush in that game is enough to, like, send me in, you know, cardiac arrest. One time I was playing that game, and I love that there's unique enemies per dungeon, right? So you never know what you're getting into. And I just met this new enemy. I was so scared, and my wife comes in and grabs my shoulder. I literally thought, like, my heart stopped. I was going to die. I tried to tell her, like, she was going to send me to the hospital, you know, but it's that sort of scare we're looking for, that long build-up, right? Atmosphere, tension.
Perfect. All right, thank you.
All right, thank you, guys.
So I'm Chris Chung, and I'm working on Cat Lateral Damage.
All right, so the first question is, what influenced you while developing this game?
So the first version of the game, the prototype, was made for a game jam during a week. It was a 7-day first-person shooter game jam. And, like, cats was the first idea that came to my mind, because I always grew up with cats.
Yeah.
And I always wanted to play a game where you play as a cat. And, like, I've never seen a game like that. So that's kind of like, I want to do that. And, yeah, it ended up being really fun just playing as a cat. I don't know. I don't know why no one else has done this. It seems like a stupid, easy idea, but I don't know.
It's entertaining. It's just one of those, like, I can just sit here and knock shit off shelves for a really long time.
Yeah.
So the second question is, what would you say differentiates your game from other games here today?
I don't know. I haven't got a chance to look around a lot of things, but I think just having a cat as the main focus is probably the big one. Like, I think just in general, a lot of games don't really do that, or I don't know. I don't know. It's pretty unique in that it's like a first-person cat game. It's like the most realistic cat simulator that, like, I've ever played. So I think that kind of makes it stand out a bit.
Nice. No, it's procedurally generated, right?
Not yet. Demo has two pre-made levels.
Okay.
But I'm finishing up the system now to procedurally generate the level, so that should be done really soon.
Excellent. So is it gonna be like different levels? I know you had talked. I read some stuff online about you're gonna have like maybe different cats and a couple different stuff. Any other things we can look forward to with like the full version?
Yeah. So the general idea is it'll kind of be like a casual roguelike. So it's imagine like Binding of Isaac if you played as a cat.
Okay.
So you'll be able to unlock and play as different cats that may have slightly different abilities or powers or something. And then within the levels, which are all procedurally generated, you'll be able to collect different things that might modify your abilities, power-ups like catnip or something where you just go crazy through the level.
Nice.
So you'll like start out in one house and like trash all the rooms in that house, and then you'll move on to another house, which is a little bit bigger, has some different objects in it. You'll kind of progress through houses that way until you get to, like, this big mansion at the end. It just has a lot of expensive things, and it's, like, huge.
Excellent.
And, you just completely trash it. So.
Awesome.
So one final question. as an indie developer, what would you say is the hardest part about creating a game?
I don't know. I think for me, I went to school to do like art for games, and I had a minor in computer science, but I was never really good at programming. So when like I'm doing this game by myself, like doing all the programming bits are kind of tricky. But I'm learning a lot in that way. So yeah, I think just kind of handling, at least for me, since I'm the only developer on it, just doing everything is kind of time consuming, and it's a lot of learning and figuring stuff out. But it's fun. So
awesome. Well, thank you.
That you're gonna have to like roll around instead of on swatting.
Like the Garfield of all cats. Yeah. Thank you.
In cat lateral damage, you can run around and knock stuff over. You can knock over books, shoes, even plants. Ha! Take that, plant.
Here you go.
Alright. I'm Ben Shostak, lead developer at Barnyard Intelligence Games, and I'm developing High Strangeness.
Okay, so the first question is what influenced you when creating this game?
Well, the game was designed by Steve Jenkins, and he put together the concept as kind of a way to meld all of the different the games that he loved to play growing up and that we all loved to play growing up from the 8 and 16-bit eras and kind of mix them together with like more modern things like chiptune music. And we kind of use all those influences to kind of inform the gameplay and make a kind of like a relevant way where you can dynamically switch between those two console generations on the fly.
So, I guess the next question is, what would you say sets your game apart from other games here today?
Yeah, I would say that we call our game a 12-bit game, and some other people have used that moniker, but for our game, it really is used as like a mix of 8 and 16-bit worlds as functionally different parts of the gameplay. In the 8-bit world, you move in four directions, you have a simpler attack, and the whole world is different. The enemies are also different, so they respond as if they're like stuck in an NES world. And then you can use your crystal skull to switch to the 16-bit world, where you can sprint around, you can do combos, and it's more like a 16-bit JRPG or action adventure like Secret of Mana or Link to the Past.
So I get the final question is, as an indie developer, what would you say is the hardest part about creating a game?
I'd say the hardest part is kind of sticking with it and staying motivated to get out there. And there's a lot of ways that indie developers can use the resources available. There's like IGDA meetups. Like anytime you can interface with other developers, it's great for inspiration and help motivating you. And things like the Boston Fig, where you can put your game on display and you can see other people playing it. And for us, that's been the biggest motivator in getting the game from something that we just work on ourselves to something we can turn into a full product, is seeing people play the game and react to it and like appreciate all of it.
Which is your favorite mode? The 8-bit or the 16-bit mode?
I have to be impartial.
I definitely see some influence from, I don't know if you guys played Legend of Zelda on the NES.
Yep.
Like that was like one of my biggest games growing up, so it's, I definitely see some things pulled from that, and it's, you know, the world and everything, just like the RPG elements and everything. It looks, I mean, I love it, so it's, I think it's going to be fun.
Yeah, it's going to be about 4 hours long, you know, give or take, and as you were saying about the influences, we kind of wanted to influence it more on a design level in how the game plays. And you know, we're not over the top with references.
Yeah.
There's like some mixed in there, but the main game is its own creation, and it takes place in a universe that's defined by its strangeness. And high strangeness itself refers to the, like, the feeling of euphoria that comes before and after, like, supernatural interactions. And that kind of informs, like, all of what's going on. It's, you're out of your element, and there's two worlds colliding, and that, that gets explained as you progress through the story.
Nice.
Very cool.
Adventure.
All right, so the first question is, what influenced you when developing the game?
I'm studying my master's, or I just defended a few months ago, and I was reading a lot about cyborg theory and thinking about digital intimacy, or how technology influences how we communicate with each other. And I had seen, I curated something at the Art Gallery of Ontario, and Nadine Lesio's game Cat Quest was in it. And it's built on the same system, so it's just like three lines where you're a cat and you, you know, go into a different room or something, and then you get a photo. And I was like, that is so cool. Like, what else could be done with this really cool medium? And I was like, sexting. Sexting can be done with this, and it needs to be done. And so, yeah, I was just thinking about, like, human-to-human connection and how technology is a part of it.
So what would you say separates your game from other games here today?
Text Adventure and Cat Quest are the only games that I know of that are a text adventure that you actually play in your SMS. So it's not an app. Like, you don't have to download anything. It's a number that you text. And so Nadine, who's the developer I've been working with, is making this engine called Texter to hopefully make it open source and so more people can make games in this style, in this medium. But right now, that's it. You know, this is it. This is what you can do. And it's cool because it's an old thing. Like, it's not new, but people view it as, like, new and weird, or aren't used to it, or like, oh, so you recreated a texting with the browser? And I'm like, nope, it's just there. It's in there. And I think that's cool. Also, it seems like here I'm the only, like, R-rated sexy game, which is fine. Totally fine.
So one last question. As an indie developer, what would you say has been the hardest part of creating your game and distributing it?
The hardest part for me, I've only been making games for like a little over a year. I'm part of a community called Dames Making Games, which is for, it's a feminist organization for women and trans people and gender non-binary people to make and play games in like a safe and supportive space. So that is really great, and without them, I wouldn't be making games. And so kind of coming out to different events and guys coming up and being like, did you program that yourself? Or like, that's not a real game, like, that's not fun, like, how do you win? Has been like a really difficult thing to kind of get around. Like, I'm kind of getting used to it now, where I'm like, okay, like, I know what you're doing, but at first I was like, this is a game? Or like my first game, Medication Meditation, it's that's where I really came up against it, of people being like, it's not a real game, it's more like an interactive art piece. And I was like, is there a difference? So kind of getting used to the community and getting to know its rules and like trying to fit in while still, you know, being me.
Yeah, I think for us, this is one of the most intriguing games that we saw on the list. So
yeah, I appreciate it.
Honestly, like, I mean, sitting down and playing it, the first thing that came to mind was like, I mean, granted, we didn't have these sex adventures in a childhood, but all the, you know, the novels that we had, that it was just like, you know, choose your own adventure, and it's kind of gone by the wayside, but this is kind of a cool way of bringing it back, and I thought it was great.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, Twine games are really popular right now, and some of them are similar to this, but they've become more like interactive fiction. But yeah, I love those style of games, and I love, like, it's kind of a blend of old and new, like I said, and I think it's cool.
That's great. And we also were talking about this, and it seems like a really cool new way to distribute your thing anywhere to, you know, anyone with a phone, basically, which is a huge medium.
It's nice. And, like, not that this game has has that kind of audience, but there's a possibility of more international things, because not everybody has a smartphone. Not everybody has, like, the app store that you can download to. And so, like, a new kind of fun way of making and playing games.
Awesome.
I'm Chris Fernandez. I'm a super rad ray gun.
Okay, so the first question is, what influenced you to make this game?
So my development partner basically came to me one day at work and said, like, hey, do you want to make, like, kind of a Mega Man-ish game that looks like a Game Boy game? And I was like, yeah, sure, why not? That was 3 years ago. And so, you know, from there, I was sort of like, all right, like, what could be a, you know, let's come up with a story justification for making it this, like, old retro game. And so that's where the whole idea of, like, it's set in the 1980s, it's about the Cold War, it's sort of like the history that my generation just was not aware of growing up because we were busy watching Ghostbusters and Transformers.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. So what would you say sets your game apart from other games here today?
Yeah, I think the aesthetic. I would say that. I'm the artist on it. But, you know, not many people do the Game Boy thing.
No.
I keep hearing there was, like, a Game Boy Jam recently, but other than our game, I've seen maybe two or three games that have ever done, like, the real four-color green palette thing before. And I think, like, I think the setting of it is actually pretty unique. Like I said, I did a lot of research into the history of what was going on then, so it's like, you know, events that most people, you'll mention it, and they're like, they'll never have heard of it. But there's a level set in India. It's a chemical spill. It was, like, actually the worse than Chernobyl, worse than the worst known industrial disaster that everyone does know. But it's a level in our game now. So there's, like, these kind of history things that don't really get touched on in games really ever, unless, like, maybe Call of Duty throws a level out there. But
yeah. So the final question is, as an indie developer, what would you say is the hardest part about making a game?
The time. Like, the amount of time it takes to make a good game is kind of just insane. And especially because, like, as an indie, a lot of times you don't have any funding, you don't have upfront, you know, you're not getting a salary from the game. You're working a full-time job, probably, and then you come home exhausted from that, and you're like, all right, I've gotta write a cutscene, or I've gotta animate a character or something. So, you know, recently switching to freelance helped for me because I can take off, you know, weeks or months at a time if I need to. But even then, like, your friends are confused. It's like, why are you, like, never doing anything these days? It's like, it's because I am spending, you know, 12 hours a day in my bedroom working on this stuff. And a lot of times it's like there's no end in sight for a long period of it. You're just working and working and working, and yet there's always a mountain of too much stuff to do. So. But, you know, we're at that point now. We'll be, like, art complete in the next week and a half, and, like, I'm super excited about getting that chunk of my life back. It's just like, oh, Q&A on boss AI, that's nothing compared to, like, having to do every single frame of animation. So, so yeah, like, definitely that time commitment that you do not realize how much time there's going to be when you set out to make a game. Like, just, it's a big thing. So.
And it's releasing on 360 and Steam?
It'll be on Xbox 360 and Steam this year. Super Rad Raygun. Midnight City is the publisher. True Fun is the developer. I'm Chris Hernandez. Chris Bryant is the programmer on it. And we've got a soundtrack by Phantom NK, who is an awesome chiptune artist. If you know who Phantom NK is, you already know he's awesome. And yeah, Nathaniel Chambers also did some additional sound. He does a lot of sound for indie games in New York City, so we all know him and see him all the time. So.
So.
Mike Stanton with Dr. Mikey Studios, Zombie Hearts Chicken.
All right, so what would you say influenced you when creating the game?
Well, I wanted to do something that was approachable for the general public, and zombies were a lot of fun at the time.
And I thought cartoon senseless violence would really be something people were into. So I smashed those all together, and that's what I ended up with.
So what would you say sets your game apart from other games here today?
I haven't seen most of the other games here today because I've been behind the booth. But as compared to, say, Endless Runners, which is the genre that I'm in, I really tried to have a lot more interesting landscapes, give the player more different things that they could do besides just running and jumping, and use different scoring mechanics. So it's eating chickens rather than just running for as long as you can.
Yeah, I found it... Actually, I mean, I've played some Endless Runner ones, but they get kind of boring because you're just really just choosing which direction to go. But this one is... This one I like because you're eating chickens, you're jumping, you're crawling under stuff. Like, there's explosions happening, yeah. Zombies exploding.
The explosions were definitely something I said from the beginning, is that when something explodes, I want the screen to shake, and I need it to be graphic, and I want body parts to fly all over, because, like, I want it to be fun even when you're losing. And I felt like that was a big thing that would keep people playing.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the final question, as an indie developer, what would you say is the hardest part of making a game?
Money. No, obviously. But, you know, the actual game development is one thing. But for me, I found the hardest part is actually just getting the word out there. I'm very happy with how the game came out, and everybody who's played it has liked it, as far as I can tell. But I haven't been able to get any real traction to really spread it. I mean, even the AAA games wouldn't go anywhere if they didn't market the hell out of them. And as an indie developer, marketing is the last thing on your mind, but needs to be the first thing. Right. And I learned that the hard way so far, which is why I'm here today.
Excellent.
Kind of.
And is it launched on like iOS?
It is. It's on iOS and Android. It's also on Ouya, because I thought that would be fun. And after this, I'll probably have to put it on PC since it's resonating so well with a lot of people here.
Yeah.
And I'm continuing to update it and try to work on it. And, you know, it's a work in progress, but I'm happy with it so far.
Right. That's all you can really ask for.
That's the game. Yeah.
Excellent.
What's the next animal after chickens?
Well, there's a slightly bigger story I could tell you if you wanted, but it's your thing. This game was actually intended to be the first step to test the waters for a bigger game, which was the original idea, where you actually play as the chickens and you carry bombs around on your back to lure zombies after you to clear the world after the zombie apocalypse. So in that, you play as chickens, you play as roosters, and that's a much larger game where you unlock characters as you go. You get to play as a team of geese called Lucy Goosey. It's a much more developed, thought-out game. But I was like, that's going to take like a year and a half, and this will take a couple of months. So I'll put this out. We'll see how it does. And if it does well after this, then, you know, maybe that what's going to be called Zombie Chicken Run. Maybe you'll see Zombie Chicken Run in another 8 months. I don't know.
Perfect.
Hopefully.
Next year. Awesome.
We'll see you then. Find me on Kickstarter.
Excellent.
Steve Goldshine, Nightlight Interactive, Whispering Willows.
All right, so what would you say influenced you to create the game?
So we had two main things that we wanted to capture when we set out making this game in August of 2012. The first was something that we felt had been really underrepresented, particularly in indie games, was a female protagonist. So we wanted to create a game with a strong female protagonist who may be in this very vulnerable position because she's a young 13-year-old girl in a haunted mansion surrounded by creepy ghosts, but yet she still has this incredible power of the astral projection where she can project her spirit and leave the limits of her physical form behind. So she has that power behind her, so that gives her the confidence and the strength to complete her task and to survive in this harsh and terrifying environment. The other thing that we wanted to capture was, we all love horror games, but we didn't want it to be the typical jump scare, startle type moment where you have just scare after scare after scare. What we wanted to create more was just a sense of perpetual unease and disquiet. So just a sense of creepiness where you're always checking over your shoulder just to make sure there isn't anything standing there, but nothing's going to be standing there. So just a sense of uncomfortable disquiet.
What would you say differentiates your game from some of the other games here today?
I would say the artwork and the art style of our game definitely stands out. I've gotten a ton of compliments and comments on how beautiful the aesthetic is from everyone who's played it. It certainly doesn't look like a lot of other 2D side-scrolling games, and it's definitely got a much more beautiful look than you typically find in an indie game.
Talking about the art style, like some of the influences that maybe pulled from other genres, whether it be comic books or anything along those lines, other video games?
Yeah, I can't personally speak specifically for the art team since I'm the composer, but I can say that there was certainly a lot of influence from the classic side-scroller games of the early days of gaming, comic books, as you said, certainly anime to an extent, and a lot of just various art that our team really enjoyed from all different kinds of media.
Great. So as an indie developer, what would you say was the hardest part about creating a game?
That's a tough question. I think that there are always going to be challenges that are unforeseen, and those are the biggest risk. We had a Kickstarter campaign that was successful back in March of 2013, and we had put ourselves in an excellent position to be successful with that Kickstarter. So that gave us a leg up for sure, but there were unforeseen problems that came along the way that no one could have had any way of knowing were going to happen. And, you know, just being able to adapt to any log that's rolling towards your feet, just being able to jump over it and keep running, that's really what it's all about, because there's going to be things that no matter how much you plan, no matter how much you prepare and anticipate, and no matter how many books you read about from advice for people who have done it before, everything like that, there's going to be things that happen that you can't plan for. So be ready for that. Expect the unexpected.
Excellent. And now, so the game is released. What else do you have in the future? Are there any other projects that you guys are working on? You know, I think people who see the game are going to be interested in potentially what else you might have in store.
Yeah, we are planning on making another game. I don't honestly know how far we are. We're still in the very embryonic planning stages. Honestly, don't know if we've yet decided if the next one's going to be 2D or 3D. So we're that early on in the concept phase, but we are far from done with the success of this game and how well it's being received. And we know that people are going to want more, so we're going to be making more.
Excellent.
All right. So this is the part of the podcast where we come back and talk about our impressions, because we spent all day at the festival and spoke to all the developers, and you heard all their interviews. So now we're going to go back and actually talk about what we thought about the game and some of the notes that we took. And
a lot of notes.
Tim was a note keeper extraordinaire.
I felt like Steve from Blue's Clues with my notepad the entire time. It was pretty awesome.
It's mail time. Here's the mail.
What were some of the questions you were like jotting down on those notes? It was just like, what kind of game is it?
Yeah, I just kind of took notes on like the art style and you know, just for doing a write up later, because there was a lot of stuff, and there were a lot of the developers were really cool and talked to us for a long enough time that I could kind of get like a background with the game. So it was definitely an awesome experience being able to talk to the people doing it themselves. You know, you don't get to do that often.
Yeah, it was really cool, and it was very low key. I mean, there were
very few people. I mean, we had press passes, so we were able to go in an hour early and talk to all the developers. But the so few people that we were able to catch the developers at any time and just be like, hey, do you have 2 minutes to give us a quick audio interview? And they're like, yeah, absolutely.
I think the longest time we had to wait was like a minute
yeah.
to talk to someone. So it's a total different experience from PAX, where you're literally in line for your entire time at PAX. So it was good. I have to say, like, if I had to compare the two, I actually think I enjoyed the Indie Game Festival better, just because it was so much more personable. You know, you like got to meet these people, and just a much better experience in my book.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I don't know. Just sitting down and playing the games, like, I didn't feel the pressure that I felt at PAX.
Yeah.
Like, I felt like there's a lot of pressure where it's like, you have 3 minutes to play this in the game, and then as soon as you're done, like, the game shuts off and someone yells at you. And
that's definitely true.
Yeah. And I think PAX is kind of also like a strategic thing. Like, you got to plan out what games you want to go to, because you got to run and stand in line the first thing in the morning.
Yep.
Whereas
you're going to miss out on something. Whereas today, I mean,
we got to see everything.
You got to see everything.
Everything that we wanted.
Everything that we wanted to see.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if we saw a few, where one or two, where we're like, I didn't really want to see this, but you want me to see it, so we'll take the time. So I think we're just gonna go in order of the way we saw and play the games throughout the day. And the first one that we saw was A Tofu Tale. Which Charles played quite a bit, and I think I played a little bit. Yeah. I think we all played a little bit. It's kind of like it's like a tofu.
It's a puzzle game.
It's a puzzle game. So you're
on a grid tile basis where you're trying to get to a destination.
Yeah, I mean, there was like a extensive backstory, and I think that was what he was trying to say, like the whole backstory to it, because it. You know, something to do with foxes. I forget what the
Japanese culture.
Lore. Yeah,
Kitsune or something like that. But there's, like, different elements. And then there's, like, a lot of dialogue. When I was playing that, I was, like, in dialogue for, like, an hour. Because there's, like, lots going back and forth. And I think it kind of explains, like, the lore behind it. And then when we were playing it, like, there's, like, little dudes floating around. The gameplay reminds me a lot of Edge. I don't know if you played Edge on, like, it's on iOS, I think. Where you kind of have to roll this block and, like, do things. And that's kind of what this was like. It was like a 3D, but, like, you can only go in four directions. And you have to roll on certain blocks, and you hit things, and then that changes what blocks you can roll on. But then there's, like, the lore element. So there's, like, these weird dudes floating around that do strange things to your little tofu blob.
There's one guy that, like, bounces you across voids, and then there was another one that, like, that you had to get a water orb and put water in his hat, so then he tips over and falls away.
Yeah.
So it was like it was very odd, and I mean I feel like if we had time to sit down and actually pay more attention to the lore,
it was hard though. I think, like, from a gameplay side, we, like, had to go back. Like, maybe if you played a lot it would be easier, but we had to go back. It took us a long time to, like, figure it out. Like, there were, like, these doors, so you had to go through a door, and then a mirror image of your tofu guy would appear in the other door, and then we had to, like, took us, like, quite a few tries to figure it out.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. It's a very challenging game.
It was
a
challenging.
A lot of creative aesthetics, though.
Yeah. Yeah, it was cool.
The next game that we saw earlier today was Red Survivor, which was a kind of like a, and it was like a Civ
based Risk
RTS sort of
like a hex map.
Yeah.
Like zombie, so you play like survivors. It's supposed to be like Russian survivors, or like kind of World War One, World War Two Russian propaganda. Like you're Russian survivors, and there's zombies and you have to kind of survive, but there's also like a resource element. So you go and you find like cabins. If you find a cabin you get like more survivors. If you find a farm you get food, and then there's like arms depots, and there's like, I think there were like groceries or grocers or something. You could go there and get food.
Yep.
So there's like a huge like strategy element to it.
You could also get grass. Like, you could pull up grass, and apparently that gave you some sort of, like, food.
Really?
Which, yeah. I was like, wait. I was on, like, a grass hexagon, and I was like, I press the button, and it was like, food. Yeah. I was like, okay.
Yeah, one food.
Eating grass.
Yeah. We're getting really desperate. Yeah, and there was also, the whole map is, like, procedurally generated, so you can, he said that you could go off and in one direction as far as you want, you
forever,
know, until you run out of RAM on your computer, because it's just
that'd be endless. Ridiculous.
Yeah, which is cool. I mean, that's it keeps the game going, you know.
It is cool, and the, each as the survivors, you can go to cabins and pick up more survivors, and then you also have like there's like the ammo depot places. You had a gun and like a hammer or yeah, like some sort of melee
weapon.
There's multiple
different types of weapons. Like I got a sickle and then I got two bows and then you can use those. Oh, really?
I didn't get that. Yeah, I died like very soon after I started.
Yeah, yeah, the guy was helping me. I forget his name, but he was helping me, and so I was like a pro at it like right away. And some of my guys had guns, some had fists, so they were like fighting the zombies. It was like useless.
Yeah,
but yeah, it was cool. It was interesting.
It was
cool art.
The next game that we saw today, which Charles is going to probably explode about, it's a game called Unbroken, which was it's like a side-scrolling iOS game that like hack and slash.
Yeah, hack and slash of. With the basically you're kind of forced to move forward.
Yeah, it's kind of almost like a runner because you keep moving.
Yeah, you're constantly forward, moving. But you keep coming up against enemies that are pretty devastating damage to you. So in that spirit, we talked to the guy about how it's very similar to Dark Souls, and it's got that kind of the component of the more you attack, the more your stamina goes down, it regenerates, but then you need like, and then you die constantly, but really it's this kind of game where you can keep playing and you level up. You can use the level ups before you restart the game, but and then you go back and you're stronger. So yeah. I was really interested in this game because it's just the art style is very dark. It's kind of, I like the ambiguity of the storyline. I like the fact that it's a fighter, and it just appealed to me. So I was ready to stay there and play the game.
Play the game to completion, even though he was like, yeah, I definitely haven't even finished this game yet. So.
Well, he said right now it's iOS only, but it kind of reminded me of like Dark Souls or Demon Souls meets like Infinity Blade because it's like an iOS game where you know it's not one of those things where you have like the virtual control sticks. It's the controls are really simple, but it's a difficult game. Like you have to really time your attacks and your blocks, otherwise you'll die in like two hits. Like I kept dying because it was just so hard, and that was like I don't know what level we were playing, but it seemed early on
it was hard.
Yeah,
it was hard. And there's only two button. It's like you're holding either side, so there's really only two button going on, like jump and then attack. And
left click on the screen was a jump attack, and then if you held it, it does a power slam to the ground, and then the right click was just your regular attack, and then if you hold both of them, it was blocked. So it was very. Yeah.
It was pretty intuitive too. So it was easy. Yeah. Like the controls were easy to get, which is great if you're creating an iOS game. So,
it's very cool. I like the art. I thought the art was really well done. It seemed like really smooth. Like just the. I mean, it was kind of like that pixel art, but the animation of the main character like attacking, and he has like this cloak and. I just thought it was really cool. He has like this antler helm, kind of reminded me of like almost like a Batman-y character because he was dark and just had these really cool moves. I just thought it was really really well done art wise.
Yeah, it was cool. It's not out yet.
Yeah, no.
But
in the works,
it'll.
If you go to their site, it seemed like you could do a preview of the game, so you could go and demo it yourself too.
Yeah, it's. I hope it does make it because it is so much more than any other iOS game I've. Yeah. Scene. So yeah.
Looks cool.
The next game we sat down with was Black Hat Oculus, which was used the Oculus Rift in. Well, first of all, there's two people. There's two players. One player has the Oculus Rift, and you're making your way through this 3D environment, and there's like different. There's different doors and keys and codes that are available that you can get, but. The second player has like an isometric view map of where the Oculus Rift player is, and that player can give text instructions as to where to go and find either find the key or you know, the Oculus Rift player will tell the person typing what the passcode is to get into a door. But there's also guards that are walking around that you can't alert. So you have to be very cooperative. The cooperation between the two players has to be on point, because we faltered quite a bit at the beginning, but
yeah, it started out, you guys just like stop, go, and then you just kept dying like every time. and then you guys switched up, and it was like you guys had seen the other side, so like you knew kind of like what you had to tell each other.
Yeah, it made more sense once you actually understood what the other player was actually seeing.
Yeah.
Because going from the text side, I was like, I don't know. I don't know what I'm doing. Like, I don't know what the guard looks like. I don't know where the keys are.
Like. Yeah. I feel like if this game ever went online, it would be a troll fest. Like, people would just be
giving you bad instructions. Yeah, I feel like it's one of those games where it's meant to be played together, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It kind of reminded me of Space Team it might be on Android now, but originally it was iOS.
Oh, yeah.
Where you, like, you have to talk. It's all about communication. Like, you talk to the other player and figure things out. And that's exactly what this is, but...
I like it because it's a cooperative multiplayer. It's you're not going against the other player, so it's...
Yeah.
You really have to work... You're working together for, like, the same goal. Yeah. So it's
I also like how it incorporates the element of like Metal Gear Solid, Snake, like do this right now, and the text just shows up on your screen. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was definitely unique. Yeah,
it was a cool way of using the Oculus Rift. I mean, the graphics in the Oculus Rift weren't like, it was like pretty.
They did make an effort to make it pure, like actual 3D. Like you go up to the wall.
Yeah.
It kind of reminded me of like Tron.
Yeah, yeah. Very Tron-esque for sure.
And it was the first time that I used the Oculus Rift. So.
Same. I was very concerned about Pink Eye, but...
Well, you'll find out tomorrow.
Yeah. If my eyes are crusted shut tomorrow, then we'll know what caused it. But, oh well. The next game that we took a look at was... called Mushroom 11, which was a game that's like post-apocalyptic, and you have control over this like goo that you're like pushing through the world to suck up different items and get through like small tunnels. But it's I didn't get to play it, so I mean
it's one of those games that you have to play to understand like the mechanics, because it's so unique. You basically, like, you're a blob. Like, it's a blob, but it's not soft. It's a hard blob. Like, it doesn't... It shapes to the surroundings, but only when you shape it. So, like, if you're not pushing it, it turns into this, like, hard rock that kind of rolls. But if you push it, then you can kind of change the shape of it and make it do things. And then there's, like... I wasn't sure what the little things were, but there's, like, little weird floaty things... Different things that you can like pick up, and it adds to your like.
It seemed like that was something building up to a power up. It looked like it was DNA.
Yeah, it gives you DNA if you get those like little floaty guys and like weird mushroom things.
You touch them, they get absorbed into your blobbiness.
Yeah,
and you have to squeeze yourself through tubes and stuff. Yeah. So like you're this giant blob, and then you come up against this like tiny hole, and you just have to like either you click on the screen and it basically evaporates your blob, and so. When your blob evaporates in that one section, it has to explode in another. So it just fills up space. Then all of a sudden, you're shooting through the tube and like squirting, and you got to make sure that you're getting it in the right way.
There's a lot of cool mechanics. And the other thing is like you can separate your blob into two blobs, and like if you make one of your blobs smaller, the other blob gets bigger. So you can kind of like teleport your blob to another point, which is really cool.
You can fling off like a one tiny section of yourself, and then delete the larger version in that one. Would like regenerate the entire mass.
Yeah.
So it was very cool.
And
I think it reminds me, not in mechanics wise, but reminds me like the Puzzler Trine, which is kind of the artistic style and how quirky you have to make. You can really there's no one way to do the puzzle. You can really do it a myriad of different ways.
Yeah, I thought the art style was really cool.
Like, it was really cool.
Just the way the blob has like weird like it reminded me of like the insides of a cell. There's like all these weird lines and like weird things moving inside the blob. And then there like you're in like this post-apocalyptic Earth that's like has these weird evolving creatures that you're sucking up, and then you know, you're crawling over buildings and there's lava and it's just it was really unique, and I thought it was one of the better games that we saw today.
Yeah, definitely one of the most polished for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I liked it. One of my favorite things was the boss battles, like at least the one boss battle that we saw was really cool, because there were like, I mean, because you are really just a thing of goo, so it's like really how can you really attack something? Yeah. How do you make it? So it was like there are little like nubbin things that you had to like absorb from the boss.
It was like a big tentacle boss shooting fireballs.
Yeah.
And you had to like crawl up its arms and eat little, it had like little seeds or something. You had to crawl up its arms and eat the seeds, and you had to crawl over it, and then finally you ate all the little bugs, and then it was like
and then disappeared.
Threw its arms up and melted.
And I like that you know, there are several scenes where like the world is like falling away from you, so you like it forces you to really have to be faster in certain scenes, while other ones force you to slow down and really like think at how you want to approach certain situations.
I thought that was cool, because it's one of those games where you would think that it's mostly like the slow paced thing where you kind of strategize, but at times like it becomes a twitch based game where you have to move your blob as fast as you can to get it through these little things.
It was good. It was very good.
That was Mushroom 11.
Mushroom 11. Not Fungus 12. The next game that we took a look at was this game called Thief Town, which had the graphics of similar to like either a very early NES game or an Atari game. I mean, when I first looked at it, I was like, wow, that looks, because it had like a desert scene, and a bunch of these little like
Custer's Revenge,
amorphous men. Yeah, the Custer's Revenge or like ET. I was like, it looks like an Atari game, but it was cool because you were there were four players. It's a party game, and there's each person. There's a bunch of different levels that you go through, but the initial one is you go through and there's a ton of guys on the screen.
All look the same.
All look exactly the same, and nobody knows who their character is. So you have to initially figure out who your character is, and then you have to go and seek out the other people that you're playing against to stab them.
Yeah, but as soon as you stab, like everyone can tell that person is like a real person.
Yeah,
and then like if you see someone stab and. Then you know that you got to stab that person to kill them.
Exactly, and not only that. Once you do stab someone, then they leak blood everywhere.
Yeah,
and then they finally fall down, which is excellent.
And the person who kills first gets the most points, and then it's all point based. It's like if you have a bunch of different rounds, each of the different rounds is different than the. They throw in that main style, which is the stab where you like where there's a bunch of you and you need to. Find other players and stab them, but they also throw in other rounds that have different dynamics.
Yeah, there's usually like a tiebreaker one, and then they'll be like some other weird. They're all different, and then eventually you got like each character got like a unique move, and like the one I had was to throw down a trap. So like, you didn't know where the trap was, but then once it sprung, it would like hurt people.
Yeah, the one that I had was. It was like there was like a smoke bomb, I think, was another one.
Yeah.
And then the one that I had was, I was able to like, cloak. So I could go and touch another, character, which was not a human character, and switch. So then people would start following the one that they thought was you. And then it was kind of neat. Graphic wise, not definitely not like, anything
it was
spectacular,
it was
totally like
stylized, you know?
But it was fun, and it'd be a fun game to like sit next to people and trash talk.
It's definitely like an angry couch game.
I mean if they can develop that to make it a lot more mini games, like to continue that.
WarioWare. Now it's going to be how many different ways can we incorporate Deep Down?
I didn't write down what it was coming to, but I think they said it was on Steam. But I think it really has to come to consoles, and at that point, it would be like definitely a fun game to play like with friends.
Yeah, definitely. The next game that we saw that I sat down and played was Albino Lullaby, which was survival horror, or I don't even know if it was survival horror. It was just like a horror game.
I think they were calling it survival horror.
Okay. And so you go into the demo was a little weird because you didn't get the full background of everything that's happening up until that point. So you're like in this creepy haunted house that it's multicolored, but it had like this fun house vibe to it, and
a dark carnival vibe with all these purples and yellows and oranges, but tons of shadows.
Very very dark.
I forget his name, but we're talking about kind of the colors, and you're saying that it's very high contrast, so it like keeps you engaged, but at the same time it's still creepy because there's so many shadows and dark areas, and then you get into like this almost funhouse zone where it's really bright and kind of throws you off, so you're kind of always engaged, which is really cool.
So I played through the game a little bit, and it was really messed up. Like I really do want to find out what more background there is, because
you find like these notes, and the notes have like little stories, and some of them were really creepy. They were talking about the grandchildren and all these weird things.
Yeah. You have to be really bad to go see grandma or grandmother.
But there was also like some humor in it, because there was one that was like, you went in the bathroom, and then it was the BM log, and it was like it had names and had numbers next to it, like.
It was entertaining, and you eventually get to get all the way to this like section where you have to press all these buttons, and then it gets into this room where you meet up with all these like these weird like creepy finger looking dudes that have no arms.
They look like, and they like totems or like
like
the heads from Easter Island.
Yeah,
really freaky as hell.
Yeah,
they're like
with really bad teeth,
terrible teeth, and they kind of just like slide around, and they were called the grandchildren, and you couldn't get eaten by the. I mean, you could not eaten, but you couldn't get captured by the grandchildren, which that the capturing part was a little anticlimactic, but in terms of what they were going for, in speaking to one of the developers, they were looking for a more Hitchcock type feel where the suspense builds, so you gain like this like excited kind of horror feeling rather than like jump scares. So it's you definitely get that toward the end of the demo where you're running to you have to sneak by all these guys and then get this like clicker thing. So then. Yeah, it gets suspenseful for sure.
Yeah, it was cool.
And they are currently on Kickstarter, and they're hoping to be funded. So
the one thing that was a little weird about it is that they did a lot of advertising saying it was Oculus ready, but then they didn't bring their Oculus Rift. So it was kind of like, well, I mean, I think it would have been a lot scarier even if they were had slightly lower graphics on the Oculus.
Yeah, I think if you played that on Oculus Rift, it would take it to a whole other level.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
The other game, the next game that we took a look at was Cat Lateral Damage, which was one of the games that I was looking.
I think we all were looking.
We all wanted to know what this whole thing was about. And going into it, I really thought that it was going to be a pretty shallow game in terms of granted, the demo that we played was your cat. It's a first person cat simulator, basically, where your paw goes out and you're knocking stuff down. And you have like different items that you need to get to knock off shelves, and that helps you progress or to complete the level, I guess. But after speaking to the developer, I think it was Chris Chung. I don't remember exactly which name, but he he's said that it's going to be like, you know, this game where, you know, it'll be different cats with different skill sets and that are going to like different houses, and that interests me. That I thought was actually really cool.
Yeah. He definitely had big plans. The demo, and I played it. They have had it available to play online on their website, so I was able to play it before we went. And I wasn't overly impressed with it, but in just talking to him and saying like what his plans are for it, it really changed my opinion, because by default it was just two levels, and in the demo it was just two levels, but his goal is to have, or what he, I think he said he already has it working, is procedurally generated levels, so every time you play it's gonna be totally different. And that, to me, that anytime something's procedurally generated, it takes it to a whole new level, because it's like it's gonna be different every time you play.
Yeah.
And then he was talking about how there you know, as you progress, the houses get nicer. Like somehow, the more asshole of a cat you are, you get put in nicer houses. So you like progress your way up from like a little apartment all the way up to like a mansion.
Yeah.
And then you just destroy really expensive stuff. And then he started talking about how like you'll be able to find like different skills for your cats. Like you can find catnip and then just go crazy and like go turbo cat. You know, I just thought it's like, you know, in first glance you didn't realize that there could be all these little things, but in talking to him, you realize that he kind of had like a vision for what he wanted to do, and there's a lot more to it. So
his vision makes me like, for whatever reason, all I'm picturing is this like, this gang of vagrant cats that are just going and breaking into people's homes and just knocking stuff off their shelves and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
it was cool.
The another game that I was actually really excited about was this game called High Strangeness, which they call it a 12-bit game because it's a mix of 8-bit and 16-bit that you can switch between. And with each genre of, or each generational gap, you can solve different puzzles or get through certain sections and or attack certain enemies, because there are certain enemies that are walking around that you can't attack unless you're either 8-bit or 16-bit or vice versa. And it was cool. I mean, it has a very you know, NES, SNES kind of RPG feel to it, and
it's kind of taking the concept of Zelda and the Dark World, Light World, and making the switch for that kind of shift between dimensions to just between the 8-bit and the 16-bit.
Yeah,
like right. He did when he'll hear it in the interview, but when we talked to him, he was talking about how it's like he didn't have a lot of other game influences, but clearly we can see them. It's like,
it reminded me of like Frodo and the One Ring. Like, for most of the part, you spend most of the time in like the 16-bit, and then like when you get stuck, it's like, all right, I gotta put the ring on, and then you have to touch the crystal skull, and then it switches you to the 8-bit world, and then you can kind of like maneuver better. But it was cool because and he explained like how the mechanics are different too, because in the 16-bit world, you can move diagonally. The enemies are smarter. They can shoot at you at different angles and move faster. But when you get to the 8-bit world, you know, it's only up and down. Up, down, sideways. And the enemies kind of move that way, too. And so it's like there's some advantage to both ways, you know, both worlds.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
It was cool. You know, I would definitely play it. He said it was going to be about a 4-hour gameplay. Which that's, you know, that's long enough that you can tell a short story and kind of get to the bottom of, you know, what is actually happening with this weird crystal skull thing. And you know, you're tasked with, what got me was it made me think of Zelda, the Legend of Zelda from NES originally, because I mean, first of all, the scenery and the backgrounds all kind of remind me of it, but the fact that you start out by talking to this like old man. And he's like, you need to go do this.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, okay, you need to find medicine, you need to find glasses, and you need to find a cane or something.
Yeah.
So, it was interesting. It was very interesting. I would definitely play it.
Yeah, and he explained that the highest strangeness had something to do with the paranormal, so it sounds like there's quite a bit of backstory, too. I didn't catch everything he said. But.
We played the promo edit of this game at PAX East, where you wake up and your cat's missing and you gotta go find your cat, so...
Oh, okay.
And then the cat is like supernatural and has this ghost element. So there's definitely. I remember some of those components from PAX East.
Cool.
Yeah. That's cool.
Cats can talk, by the way.
So the next game that we stopped at, the next booth that we stopped at, was a very odd, odd sounding game. And it was, you know, it's Sext Adventure. So you've already heard about the game, but going into it, I really thought it was going to be, I thought it wasn't going to be very much, and I was like a little leery because like
I didn't know what to expect
at all. And going into it, it was like I don't know what I'm doing here. Like
it's definitely not a game like obviously they had to demo it. But it's one of those games that, like, I don't think you can play, or I don't think you can do unless you're by yourself and with full knowledge that no one will ever know, like, what you type, you know, because it's kind of, it's
filthy.
Yeah, it's your sex thing, basically, so you have to, like, type out things. And
it's, but it is unisex, because it starts out, one of the initial sexts. Well, first of all, let's just go over how it is.
Well, yeah, I was going to say that it changes depending on what your responses are.
Right.
So one of them was like basically you it sends you it's like a it's a texting thing, so you can use your phone. It's like almost like a service. So you text it and then it texts you back on any type of phone. So you can do it on your smartphone or you know, if you still have a flip phone. I'm sorry, but if you still have a flip phone, you can actually play that on a flip phone. So basically you text it and then it texts you back and then there'll be two like capitalized words and then you respond with either of those words and then it will kind of build a story. So it's kind of like choose your own adventure.
Yeah.
And you respond to it and then, you know, things change. But, one of them was, I forget the exact wording, but it was like stroke my hairy chest or
my furry bra.
Or take off my furry bra.
Yeah.
Bra, yeah. So it's like if you, you know, if you're a girl looking for a dude, if you're looking for a dude, or if you're looking for a girl,
right,
you respond to
regardless.
You know? Yeah, so, which I thought was, you know, smart that it would figure that out. You know, it's I thought it was a really unique game. It's one of those things that it's a huge departure from what I think most people who were going there were kind of expecting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, pretty much everyone going there was expecting to have a little dude on a screen that did things, and this is totally different from that, but
right,
it's still in the realm where it's something that you control and you change and there's user input and feedback. So I thought it was really interesting.
And growing up with the Choose Your Own Adventure novels, I mean, granted, those are different, quite a bit different, but just the element of being able to kind of choose your own path of how you want to approach situations. And I mean, there's a myriad of things that you can do, because like with each text that you do, like the paths continue to branch out, and just like the number of options that you could have done gets a lot larger.
Yeah.
So, you know, I read all those Goosebumps Choose Your Own Adventure books, and it was always like, page 8, you're dead. I'm just going to go back and do something else.
Yeah.
But
yeah. I mean, at the very least, if you are someone who likes to sex, this is your chance to like sex without ever having to worry about it like being leaked online or something. You know?
Right. And if you're a single person.
Yeah, exactly. If you're single and you don't want to like make the effort to like meet someone, you can literally sex a robot.
Yep.
And the best part too, like, we didn't even mention that it sends you like pictures too.
It does.
We were like too afraid to look at them, but it, they're, I guess they're like blurred out, so it's not as bad.
No.
It was unique, you know. I thought it was cool.
I wonder if it'll be blurred out in the real version.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Let's see.
In the privacy of your own home.
It'd be cool if they had like a PG or an R version, you know.
Yeah, because this one was definitely explicit, for sure.
I guess it would be more like NC-17 or like, well, I don't even know what's worse than that.
I mean, when they're talking about like vulvas and like I like I like really close up pictures of genitalia. It's like okay, really. So yeah, that
it's a really weird one.
It was a weird game, but it was I'm glad we checked it out because it was cool. Definitely a surprise. The next game that the booth that we went to was this game called Super Rad Ray Gun, which dropping my phone. Sorry, I'm gonna break things while I'm on this podcast. Yeah,
basically it was a side-scrolling Mega Man kind of adventure from the like an NES. They took a lot of their inspiration. They wanted to, the guy who was the developer one always wanted to work on a video game, and so when he had the opportunity, he was saying basically that I made a game that's reminiscent of games I like to play. So he made a Mega Man game that was based in the 90s with
80s.
Oh, was it the 80s?
It was the 80s.
The 80s and so a Soviet attack. So here this. You're this guy with a ray gun for a hand who's shaped like a Game Boy.
Yep.
Who is fighting communists.
And it's all in Game Boy. It was talked about in the interview, but it was all in this like the Game Boy color scheme. So there's very few colors, but
there's dark green and there's a light green.
But it's they pull a lot of pop culture references in there. You know, there's one boss that you get to where, you know, she shoots these missiles from her like pointy bra, which is definitely like a Madonna reference.
Yeah. The name was Madonna.
Yeah. So I thought this game had like such a cool, it's supposed to be like 80s Cold War, like alternate universe where America's like under attack, and we were going through some of the levels. Like one of them, we were in Washington DC and then we were in Brooklyn. And I just thought it was like really unique, and the fact that it had like the Game Boy color style was cool. It was kind of like a real throwback, and I feel like because it's 80s, it's kind of like back to kind of our generation, but maybe even the generation before us, because it's like all these references that you had to be alive back then to know about. And then even he was saying like a lot of people were going to play this and they won't even know about some of these references because it's all like real things.
Right,
I thought it was really cool, and all the pop culture references, like Madonna and
Diana Ross,
and I think there's Michael Jackson in there too. It's just all these things that that's like one of those games that like it's almost like it reminds me of like a Disney movie, but there's all these jokes that like the kids won't understand, only the parents will know about, you know.
Yeah.
So you play this game, and you're gonna recognize all these people, and you're just gonna laugh your ass off because they're.
Well, it's gonna be a perfect game for this generation, especially because it's like all those people that. Will get those references are having children or have children now that would want to play this game anyways, just because of the gameplay, because the gameplay is actually fun and entertaining. So,
it's Red Dawn meets Mega Man.
So it was cool.
And it also has a really good soundtrack. They gave us a copy of the soundtrack.
Yeah.
Which was cool.
It's like a chiptune.
And even just listening in the menus and stuff, it just sounded really good. So I'm excited to listen to that.
I think it's on Xbox and 360 and Steam. PC. Yeah, Steam. Yeah.
There's a lot of sound people presenting these games.
I was surprised. He was like the guy that we talked to was like a graphic artist.
Yeah.
The next game that we look at was it was called Zombie Hearts Chicken, which was it's like an iOS based game that he wants to bring over to PC, but it was basically a runner that had like a bunch of different elements added in, and I think he talked about it eating chickens and punting chickens with dynamite strapped to them and jumping over things and going under things and
so you play
doing backflips.
You play the zombie and the goal is to eat as many chicken as possible, but you have to like avoid this chicken with dynamite, like chickens just running around with dynamite strapped on them. Like
if you eat it you explode.
Yeah, if you eat it they'll explode, and also if they get behind you then they'll run up and explode on you again because you're all like running in the same direction.
Yep.
And
like the ones with dynamite are actually actively trying to destroy you.
Yeah,
they would follow you through things.
Yeah,
only if you bump into them though. So if you just punt them, then they just keep going out in front of you.
You can also do a backflip, and then if you do the backflip, you can like jump over them and then punt them into things like other chickens. So
yeah, it was cool. And like we talked about it, but the explosion mechanics, or like the explosions of the zombie, like after he either eats the chicken with the dynamite strapped to it or gets hit by it, is really, really entertaining.
Yeah, he like when he eats it, like he blows up, and then it's just like the legs, like your spinal column, like walking and falling over.
Yeah, cool. And it's the game is really colorful. It reminds me a lot of a little bit of like the game Stick It to the Man, which was on PlayStation 4 in terms of that just kind of like colorful art style to it. But it's definitely pleasing to the eye. And the last game that we took a look at was Whispering Willows, which Charles, you played. You can explain it.
Yeah, I had the opportunity to play it. So basically, you're a girl who can project her spirit in this haunted house who's trying to figure out what happened to her uncle. And that may not be a great description for the game, but it was really beautiful. And basically, your projection to the spirit is kind of like you exploring little crevices and stuff where you can activate things. And the game, we didn't get too far into the game, but the game looked fairly creepy in the music. Because of the haunted nature of the house, like arms reaching out to get you when you go into your spiritual form, you can see things that you don't see in your human form. So yeah. I think what drew us in immediately was just how beautiful the art was. I think that was probably, I mean, Mushroom 11 had really unique and cool art, but I think that with the Whispering Willows was just really beautiful. So
had really, really cool lighting too, and the fact
that
you were a girl, and then you could go and you could astral project on like a little I don't even know what you would call it, but a little wisp came out, and it would cause like this blue light to shine out. And a lot of times you had to do it like fit through small holes, and just the way that it was kind of like this 2D scene, and all of a sudden all this really cool lighting comes out, like you didn't really expect it, and it kind of threw you off guard, and I thought it made it look a lot cooler. And then you know there's like candles, and I thought the lighting was really well done for like a 2D side scroller like that.
Yeah, that's something you don't see very often in 2D side scrollers is like that sort of lighting effect where you're the light it only lit up the rooms that you were most
it changes,
like the most recent
changes the atmosphere too, because
the closest that I've seen as far as lighting was that Ninja game I played earlier this year, because just how much shadows played a role, and that it doesn't seem like that is going to as much of an influence on how the gameplay in this game, but it just makes it that much more of an atmosphere for the game.
Yeah, I think the thing that hit me right off the bat, apart from like the lighting and just like the general art style, was just the how detailed the backgrounds were, because the in most 2D side scrollers they don't focus a lot of time on the backgrounds, because it's just like you're just moving back and forth. But since there is such a deep storyline that goes along with this 2D side scroller, like the backgrounds, I mean, there's just like, it's not stuff that you're necessarily interacting with, but it just adds to the overall atmosphere, and just like crates and the texture in the wall, and it just added an element that I don't think I've seen in a game like that before. So that's all the games that we got interviews for anyways, but I think we're gonna go through and name a couple of our we're gonna go through some categories name quickly.
Just four little categories we came up with. So we figured we'd get the bad one out first. So our first category is the biggest disappointment.
Which I think
we all agree.
Well, first of all, before we my biggest disappointment was a game that didn't show up, because Never Alone, which was the game that's based on the Alaskan Native storytelling, did not show up, I was unable to play it, and I was kind of bummed out about that. So I'm going to reach out to them and hopefully get some sort of demo or something that I can play. I know it comes out soon anyways, but the biggest disappointment in terms of gameplay and everything else about the game that we actually saw, Charles played. I think we're all on the same page here, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
What game?
It was called The Goo Fight.
Oh, God. Goo Fight?
The Goo Fight by Sanctum Games.
And so, basically the game is like a... the game wanted to be like a Mario shooter, where you're this goo thing and you're supposed to be able to shoot other goo creatures, and then you have to move throughout the map, like jumping and all of this. But essentially, the game mechanics were broken because you couldn't shoot, and you don't really... I don't know how to describe it. It's just the game mechanics were so clunky, is how you, when you jump, you press up, and then you can just press left or right, and it just moves your character without any sort of additional animations left or right on the map. So it's like, I don't know, it's like there moving was... in an Excel document rather than actually playing a game. It's like, oh, I want to go right. Okay. Conveyor belt.
There was no momentum, like, mechanics whatsoever in it.
No. It was just... And what's funny is that we kind of got drawn in because it was this old middle-aged woman who was like, please come try my game. And it was like, if this is the kind of game that belongs in like Microsoft, like
already 95.
Microsoft 95 already installed. It's like one of those games you're just kind of like, you're like, I got to kill like 15 minutes. Oh, okay. Minesweeper is 10 times, a million times better than this game, but maybe you're tired of it, so you'll go and you'll play this game, and you'll be like, that was awful. Even by those standards, it was terrible.
It was just not good.
There was another game that they had that you talked about.
EVMA.
Yeah, and then there was... So they had this thing about this pamphlet of four games, two of which are already out, and she's like, oh, go buy them. And then the other two are basically just superimposed, like, background pictures you get off the internet with their game titles on them. So
it was like... one of the games I think was called like Find the Ninja or something, and it was basically like pictures that they like stock photos that they got, and then they just superimpose a ninja on the screen.
So if there was ever a turn in the punch bowl, it was this game.
Yeah, I watched you play these and stay as far away as I could. I didn't want to interact, but I always feel bad for the lady, like.
It's definitely not her games, because the name on the card is...
it's probably her son, honestly.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's probably like, this is my son's game, you should buy it.
Yeah, but, I mean...
Thanks, Mom.
Maybe if he's 10, then he's got a long way to go, so...
Yeah.
There's always room to improve, so... Version 2.0.
You can't get much worse, so...
Alright, so... That's biggest disappointment. The next in the category is best art.
Best art, I think, I would say best art definitely goes to Whispering Willow. Just because of the lighting and the background and, you know, everything that we talked about before. I think that game stood out to me visually the most out of any other game that we played today.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
I'd say it was really between that and Mushroom 11.
Yeah.
I think Mushroom 11 edges it out just because based on the gameplay that I did, I feel like you're actually interfacing with the world a little bit more, and that artistic style that it is also integrated in how you interact with the world. So I think that edges it out for me. But
yeah, I think the attention to detail in Mushroom 11 was beyond anything else at the show. You know, really just the art style, the fact that you know, the interaction, the way that the I'm going to call it the blob, I don't know if he has a name, but the blob and the way when Stan would absorb things and just the, you know, it would like change colors and it just was really kind of like invigorating, and the fact that you were like this green blob sitting against this like cold, gray and red world, it kind of really had this huge contrast. And I thought it was just really unique, really drew me in.
I think the other thing that really got, I think the other thing that really, you know, made a difference was that those two games were also really polished.
Yeah.
You know, compared to some of the other games that we had looked at, the games were polished. Like, you know, they had taken care of the mechanics early, and they spent a lot of time on the visual art. So they.
Yeah, I think Whispering Willows was another game that had just a high contrast that was really just the art and then like the lighting and just the way that the scenery was set up just was really engaging and like really, you know, even though it's like a 2D side scroller, it still makes you feel like you're there, like you're in like a room, like a dark room, you know. It was just well done.
Yeah, it was great.
All right, so next category is most innovative.
What are the other two categories? I don't know what the other most innovative and
most innovative. The next category is most likely to make it big.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's right. Okay.
I would say the most innovative for me was the Black Hat Oculus, just because they actually took the Oculus Rift and they kind of defined it into something that was a little different than any of the other games. It incorporates elements from games you've already played, where you're waiting on instructions from somebody else. It takes that and gives it to a player. I mean, graphically, not great. Gameplay-wise, mixed bag, just because of the learning curve and because it's tough. It's a hard game.
It's very hard.
Yeah. But I think...
And Charles also told me to go... So
yeah.
Charles is telling me to do things.
I'm writing like an essay on this detailed instructions when I realized the most fundamental thing between going left and going right out of the door to get the keys that he needs, I got wrong at the very beginning.
He's like, go all the way to the right. So I go all the way to the right. And then I see on the screen, I meant go all the way to the left. Jeez.
Yeah, you got all the way to the left and there's a guard in the hallway. And it was just like, oh, okay. And then... Of course, somebody kicked the power cord, so we lost. But
yeah,
I feel like that one was the most innovative for me.
I would say the most innovative for me was probably the sexing adventure.
Yeah, me too. That's what I was gonna say.
Because I don't know. It's just like it was one of those games that really caught me off guard because I was like I didn't know what it was gonna be about, but it was. You know, it was taking something old and making it new again and making it relevant.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, it was interesting. And the subject matter was obviously like, like definitely makes you turn a little red when you're sitting there and you're like, oh, there are people around me, like potentially reading all of this stuff.
I like that like the demo was a phone, but there was like a little like booth, so you could like hide in the booth and some people couldn't see you. And then when we were there, there was another girl who started playing, and she was like looking over her shoulder. Like I don't think she wanted us to like see what she was saying, but you know, that's the nature of the game. I feel like that, like, of all the games we saw there, that Sex Adventure was just so far from everything else. And not in like a bad way. It was just different, you know. It wasn't like anything that we had played, and it wasn't like anything that we even thought that we would play there.
Right.
And you know, it was different in a good way. And I think that to me that was the most innovative game there.
Absolutely.
All right. Final category. Most likely to make it big.
Most likely to make it big.
I'm going to go with my pick for most likely to make it big is Mushroom 11.
Yeah.
I think it was the most polished game there. I think it was the most different, the most unique. It was, of all the games that we could play, I think it was the game that I could most likely see myself spending hours playing. I don't know.
I completely agree. I mean, like, I feel like the game is finished. The game appeals to a large, like, demographic of people.
Yeah.
You know, because when we were there, like, when Charles and Tim were playing, or I don't remember which one of you was playing,
yeah,
but
I think we both played them. Yeah.
Like, there were a couple girls that sat down, and I'm not being sexist here, but you know, it's a game that interests everybody.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'm just saying that there are different types of games that you know, the genders like. And I mean, talking to we went to the Facebook booth, and the girl there was like, I was like, well, oh, what time, you know, she was showing some Facebook type game stuff, and I was like, well, what kind of games do you play? Well, I play like I play the hardcore stuff, but I also play like the Kim Kardashian one that's on. And I was like, oh,
I was literally looking for a garbage basket to like throw.
But hey, you know, some guys love that game probably too.
So. I'm sure they do. But Mushroom 11, like, really, it really does appeal to, I think, a grander group of people. So.
Yeah, well, to your point, we were talking to one of the other developers, and they were saying, you know, their Twitch reaction isn't great, so, like, they don't like to play, like, shooters and stuff like that, because they're, you know, they're just not as good at reacting quickly. So games like this, where it's not about reaction speed, it's about, like, your ability to strategize and kind of think of different ways to do things, those appeal to them. So I feel like Mushroom 11 is one of those games where it appeals to, you know, appeals to everyone, because it does pretty much everything. And I just felt like it was the most unique of all the titles, and I feel like it's the one I could most likely see, you know, on the App Store, on Steam, on deal, you know, downloadable.
On PlayStation Vita, please.
I can easily see that one going into all of the categories. I would say another one that I feel like is very likely to succeed is probably that Zombie Love Chicken game.
Yeah. Because it was so simple.
With his vision for where he wants to take the game, I feel like there's a lot of options that, I mean, granted, we've talked about how we don't necessarily like microtransactions, but I feel like that game could incorporate a lot of that with the expanded world. And, I mean, not to discount Mushroom 11, but I feel like once you play through it, I'm not sure how many times you want to go back to play it. So, different level of success. It's kind of like, which is the game that's going to be the Facebook game that's going to be, like, super popular? It's probably not Mushroom 11, but Mushroom 11 will be a successful game.
Fun to play versus makes a lot of money.
Yeah. I think one final category that we should include are weirdest games of the convention, because I have two in mind. One of them I actually spent time with. The other one, I just walked by and I was like, "That's weird. I don't want anything to do with that." The one that I walked by was, it was like the world's best soda drinking simulator. Oh, yeah. I was like, "What? I don't know."
They were holding signs for this everywhere, free soda at their booth, and it was like, "Really? You gotta resort to like signs everywhere to get people to come to your game?" Like,
I just didn't understand. Like, I didn't understand the premise. It was just like, I just don't get it. But the one that I actually played was an Oculus Rift game called Alien Makeout Simulator, and basically you put on the Oculus, and in the Oculus Rift, in the screen you see, like, basically your weird alien lips, your own lips in front of you, and then
are you an alien in that game?
I think so.
Yeah, you're an alien, and there's like a weird. There's like another alien that has like a bunch of different lips.
It has like eight lips, and it's like, ooh.
Yeah, and it's holding a glass of wine, and it's wearing a dress, and you have to like move your head forward to like kiss all of these different lips. And I was like,
it reminds me of the Zelda thing where you have to do a song with all the toads, because there was definitely like a song component to it, because every time you would like do the kiss, there would be some tone that would be like,
I think the worst part is like every time so you had to like kiss, and like each time you had to like hold your lips there for some amount of time, where they're like, there's like a little ring, and then it completed. But each time you kissed the alien lady, her eyes rolled back in her head. I don't know if it was her, but I mean, it had very very voluptuous lips. And every time you kissed it, it was like, oh, and the eyes rolled back. It was like, oh.
Yeah, it had like a weird lady boner thing going on. And I was like, ugh.
I don't know how to feel about this.
I mean, like I don't... the game in its current state, I don't know why you would play, like, more than just, like... Yeah. If you're going to play it, like, in an arcade, maybe.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't understand how you would progress in there.
I feel like this is the beginning. It's gonna be like weirdest sex simulator step.
Weirdest / gimmickiest game, I think, is that one. That one's the winner.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, unless you like, you got the meter, the love meter up high enough, and then at the very end it goes, "You want to get out of here?"
Yeah.
And I was like, "Yeah, sure." And then the second, is the second level gonna be like, "Okay, I made it to second base with this creepy alien thing."
I feel like all and the
that's
other...
when the Oculus Rift tentacles pop out of it, and you're left wondering why you ever bought it.
Yeah. I feel like all the other games there can like be used on even the Oculus Black Hat. All the other games can be played not on an Oculus Rift. They can be played like on screens in different rooms, stuff like that. But this game, like the only other way I could see you playing this is like with a Kinect, and even then you'd just be like leaning forward, kissing, like that would
be incredibly awkward to watch people try to do this too.
Like it just seems like such a
one purpose. You could port it over to iPad where then like
kiss the iPad.
It would be like you'd be constantly just kissing the iPad.
I didn't even think that. That's super worse.
Filthy iPad.
Or any touch screen, really.
Don't touch that.
Even when on the train, everyone's like kissing their phone. Like,
I feel like that would be really big in Japan.
Yeah. It probably is already. This is probably just from Japan.
Yeah.
Well.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so now we're going to do our... We'll each do our top three.
Top three. You go first, Tim.
All right. So number three for me was... my top three is just the games that I thought were good that I could see myself playing. Number three on my list is Unbroken, because I thought it was just really cool, had a really cool art style. Seemed like one of those games that you can pick up and play like for a couple minutes and just get really into it and then pick it up again later. It's one of those games that you could play for hours or play for a couple minutes and still get the same out of it. And just looked really well polished, looked like a game that... looked like a good game. It looked like a game you could download right now. Second on my list is Super Rad Raygun, just because I thought the art was really cool. I thought that like the idea of like a Cold War, alternate universe is really cool, and I thought the art was cool, and I thought that the bosses like Madonna and Michael Jackson. The other one was who was the other one?
Diana Ross.
Diana Ross. I thought they were just like really funny, and the way just the way that they were like animated and. The way they did things was hilarious. So
yeah, it was great.
That looked really fun, and my number one was Mushroom 11, just because I thought it felt like it was the most polished. It was the most had the best art, and it just looked the best. And it was a game that was different from everything else. So that's my number one.
I'm trying to think of what my number three would be, but probably on the same. I really like Mushroom 11, but I think I'm not going to put it on my list. Number two, I think, would be Thief Town. Just because I enjoyed that game. I think it would be fun if you could play it online. I'm not sure that they were going to add that component in. Maybe you said on the interview, I can't recollect. Obviously my number one is Unbroken, because I'm going to play that game and I'm going to beat it.
Yeah, Charles is going to play the shit out of that game. Yeah.
I'm trying to think of what my number would be. There's a bunch of games that we didn't really get to explore that, granted, we kind of explored all the ones that we thought of initially, but once you were walking around, there was a few games that looked really cool that I would have liked to maybe spend a little more time with. Maybe the Moon Hunters game, just because it had an element of strategy in it that reminded me of Final Fantasy Tactics and like Vandal Hearts. And I really like those kind of games, just because I like RPG and I like the strategy element. So we don't have a full report on that game, but it's probably my number three.
Cool.
I'd say my dang, I have to look at the list because I'm like there are a few games where many of the games that we saw today were games that I would actually sit down and play. Yeah. They may not be my top ones, but like I would pay, $4.99, $9.99 for some of these games, and or even $15, whatever they decide to charge. But I'd say my number three is probably Albino Lullaby, only because I'm a huge survival horror game fan, and I was intrigued by the storyline and the fact that you were plopped down into kind of the almost like the middle of the game. I felt like I really wanted to know more about it. And with all the notes and everything that you're left with, I was intrigued, and you don't have any weapons. It reminded me a little bit of Outlast. in that sense. And you know, there's a sneaking component to it. I don't feel like it's in its final build what we saw, obviously. But I just feel like there's a lot more to it that I'd really like to know, and I'd really like to see the storyline. But my number two, I would say, I'd probably say Super Rad Ray Gun, for the same reasons that Tim said, because it was, you know, I was a Game Boy kid, and it was, you know, the visual style was great, and I loved all the throwbacks to all these things, like. And I love games that you can go to and really find, like, I don't know, just like those Easter egg type things hidden. And man, number one, you know, I'm gonna give two runner ups because I liked both of them, but Whispering Willows definitely a runner up, Sext Adventure only because it's like it brings me back to like all those childhood memories of things minus the fact that it's like explicit sexually, but
all those childhood memories
all those explicit sexual memories that I have, but I think the number one I have to go with Mushroom 11. It was clearly the most polished game, and it, you know, I could see myself playing it, and I want to play more levels. I didn't get to play it very much. I didn't play it at all today, but I would definitely play a lot of it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Okay.
Well,
we're getting ready to head out. We're gonna go to the after party.
So maybe in our next podcast we'll let you know how that actually goes, because I don't know where.
Maybe it'll be a morning podcast because one of us dies because it's like ridiculous ordeal.
Or Charles goes off with another group and ends up in a completely wrong part of the city.
The next time you hear from me, I will be in Hong Kong.
So that brings us to the end of the podcast. I want to thank all of the developers that took the time to do interviews with us today, because we super appreciate it. I know that you guys say that you do too, but you know, we want to get the word out to everybody about all of these games. And
also, we'll be probably putting up a bunch of different articles on the WordPress website about some of the games that we didn't talk about today, just kind of our impressions on some of what the other titles were.
Probably a little bit more detailed stuff on the website, so check it out, lmgamers.com. And thank you, Tim. Thank you, Charles. I'm Nick. This has been Late Night Gamers Podcast, episode number 51. And from Boston Festival of Indie Games, we are done.
Late night gamers. Steve, this game sucks so bad, it's so unbalanced, blah, and then I just quit and never play it ever again.
Carls,
what do you do in your free time? Sit around knitting? Screw that shit, I'm gonna cut up a dragon's head.
Tim,
it's okay if your guts spill out and you explode into a bloody mess, as long as you don't take your clothes off.
Late night gamers.
And the pictures, there's links in there. I didn't click on any.
Oh, why not? Why not?
What? There were people around. I was trying to put my phone as far in as possible, but
I mean, you're at a booth called Sext Adventure.
I know.